reckon... Yes, said Iolaus. I reckon Ronald McDonald is like Jesus Christ. Big Mac did that kind of thing. Sometimes he came out with a kind of big, slow statement that suggested some sort of deep thinking had been going on for some time. It was like mountains. Johnny knew they were made by continents banging together, but no one ever saw it happening. Yes, said Iolaus in a kind voice, and why do you think this? Well, look at all the advertising, said Big Mac, waving a fry in the general direction of the rest of the burger bar. There's this happy land you go to where there's lakes of banana milkshake and trees covered in fries. And then there's the Hamburglar. He's the devil. Mr. Zippy's advertised by a giant talking ice cream, said Wobbler. I don't like that, said Iolaus. I wouldn't trust an ice cream that's trying to get you to eat ice creams. Occasionally they talked like this for hours, when there was something they didn't want to talk about. But now they seemed to have run out of things to say. They all looked silently at Johnny, who'd hardly touched his burger. Look, I don't know what's happening, he said. Gobi Software's going to be really pissed off when they find out what you've done, said Wobbler, grinning. I didn't do anything, said Johnny. It's not my fault. Could be a virus, said Iolaus. Nah, said Wobbler. I've got loads of viruses. They just muck up the computer. They don't muck up your head. They could do, said Iolaus, with flashing lights and stuff. Kind of like hypnosis. You said before I was making it all up. You said I was projecting fantasies. That was before old Patel went through half a dozen boxes. I'm glad I saw that. You know, she actually got another copy and her money back. Actually... Johnny smiled uncomfortably. Wobbler drummed his fingers on the table, or partly on the table, and partly in a pool of barbecue sauce. Now, I still reckon it's just something Gobi Software did to all the games. Core, I like the virus idea, though, he said. Humans catching viruses off of computers. Nice one. It's not like that, said Johnny. They used to do this thing with films where they'd put in just one frame of something, like an ice cream or something, and it'd enter people's brains without them knowing it, and they'd all want ice cream, said Iolaus. Subliminal advertising, it was called. That'd be quite easy to do on a computer. Johnny thought about the captain showing him pictures of her children. That didn't sound like hypnosis. He didn't know what it did sound like, but it didn't sound like hypnosis. Perhaps they're real aliens, and they're in control of your computer, said Iolaus. Ooh-wee-ooh, said Big Mac, waving his hands in the air and speaking in a hollow voice.
Johnny Maxwell did not know it, but he had just strayed into the toilet zone.
Deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle. After all, you're supposed to be leading them to Earth, Iolaus went on. But that's just their own name for their own world, said Johnny. You've only got their word for it. And they're newts, too. You could be bringing them here.
They all looked up, in case they could see through the ceiling, T&F insurance services, and the roof, to a huge alien fleet in the sky above.
You're just getting carried away, said Wobbler. You can't invade a planet with a lot of aliens out of a computer game. They live on a screen. They're not real.
What are you going to do about it, anyway? Said Iolaus.
Just keep doing it, I suppose. Said Johnny.
Who was that girl in Patel's?
Don't know, said Wobbler. Saw her in there once before playing Cosmic Trek. Girls aren't much good at computer games, because they haven't got such a good grasp of spatial something or other like we have, he went on airily. You know, they can't think in three dimensions or something. They haven't got the instincts for it.
The captain's a female, said Johnny.
It's probably different for jarred alligators, said Wobbler.
Big Mac sucked a sachet of tomato ketchup.
Do you think it might still be going when I'm old enough to join the army? He said thoughtfully.
No, said Iolaus. Stormin' Bruce will get it all sorted out. He'll kick some butt.
They chorused, some butt what? Like tired monks. They went to the cinema in the afternoon. Alabama Smith and the Emperor's Crown were showing on screen S. Wobbler said it was racist, but Iolaus said he quite enjoyed it. They discussed whether it could still be racist if Iolaus enjoyed it. Johnny bought popcorn all round. That was another thing about trying times. Pocket money was erratic, but you tended to get more of it. He had spaghetti hoops when he got home and watched TV for a while. The pyramid-shaped man disguised as a desert seemed to be on a lot now. He told jokes sometimes. The journalists laughed a bit. Johnny quite liked Stormin' Norman. He looked the sort of man who could talk to the captain. Then there was a program about saving whales. They thought it was a good idea. Then you could win lots of money if you could put up with the game show's host and not, for example, choke him with a cuddly toy and run away. There was the news, the walking desert again, and pictures of bombs being dropped down enemy chimneys with pinpoint precision, and sport. And then, all right, let's see. He switched on. Yes, space, and more space. No scree-wee anywhere. Hang on, he thought. They're all in the big fleet, aren't they? Following me. They followed me out of game space. You must be able to get there from here if you keep going long enough. In the right direction, too. Which way did I go? Can I catch myself up? Can anyone else catch me up? He watched the screen for a while. It was even more boring than the quiz show. Sooner or later, he'd have to go to sleep. He'd thought hard about this while Alabama Smith was being chased by bad guys through a native marketplace. Johnny had a theory about these marketplaces. Every spy film and every adventure had a chase through the native marketplace, with lots of humorous rickshaws crashing into stalls and tables being knocked over and chickens squawking. And the theory was it was the same marketplace every time. It always looked the same. There was probably a stallholder somewhere who was getting very fed up with it. Anyway, he'd take his camera. He went to bed early with the camera strap wound around his wrist. Cameras didn't dream. The ship smelled human. There were no alarms, no hissing noises. I'm back, thought Johnny. And there was the scree-wee fleet spread out across the sky behind him. And the camera with its strap wrapped around his arm. He untangled it quickly and took a photo of the fleet. It whirred out of the machine after a few seconds. He held it under his armpit for a moment, and it gradually faded up. Yep, the fleet. If he could get it back, he'd have proof. There was a red light flashing beside the screen on the console. Someone wanted to talk to him. He flicked the switch.
"We saw your ship explode," came the voice of the captain.
The screen crackled for a moment and then showed her face. It looked concerned.
"And then it returned again. You are alive?"
"Yes," said Johnny, and then added, "I think so."
"Excuse me, I must ask, what happens to you?"
"What?"
"When you go."
Johnny thought, "What do I tell her? I stay awake in school, I stay in my room a lot, I hang out with Wobbler and the others. We hang around in the mall, or in the park, or in one another's houses, although not my house at the moment because of trying times, and say things like, 'I'm totally splanked,' even though we're not sure what they mean. Sometimes we go to the cinema. We live in Blackbury, most excellent city of cool. I must have the most boring life in the entire universe. I expect there's blobs living under rocks on Neptune that have a more interesting life than me." "It'd be too hard to explain," he said. There was a ping from the radar. "I have to go," he said, feeling a bit relieved. Facing someone else in Mortal Kombat was better than trying to tell a giant newt about trying times. There was a ship coming in fast. It didn't seem to notice him. Its screen must be full of scree-wee ships. It was in the middle of his targeting grid. Around him the starship hummed. He could feel the power under his thumb. Press the button, and a million volts, or amps, or something, of white-hot laser power would crackle out and... His thumb trembled. It didn't seem to want to move. "But no one dies," he told himself. "There's just someone somewhere sitting in their room in front of a computer. That's what it looks like to them. It's all just something on a screen. No one really dies. I can fire right into his retrotubes with pinpoint precision. No one really dies." The ship roared past him and onwards towards the fleet. On the radar screen he saw two white dots, which meant that it had fired a couple of missiles. They streaked towards one of the smaller Scree-Wee ships, with the attacker close behind them, firing as he went. The Scree-Wee burst into flame. Johnny knew you shouldn't be able to hear sound in space, but he did hear it, a long, low rumble washing across the stars. The human ship turned in a long curve and came back for another run. The captain's face appeared on the screen.
"We have surrendered! This must not be allowed!"
I'm sorry,
"You must stop this now!"
Johnny let his own ship accelerate while he tried to adjust the microphone. "Game player! Game player! Stop now! Stop now or..." "Or what?" he thought. "Or I'll shout stop again?" He raised his thumb over the fire button, took aim at the intruder. "Please! I mean it!" It was plunging on towards another ship, taking no notice of him. "All right, then!" Blinding blue light flashed across his vision. He shut his eyes, and still the light was there, purple in the darkness. When he opened them again, the ship ahead of him was just an expanding cloud of glittering dust. He turned in his seat. The captain's ship was right behind him. He could see its guns glowing. They never did this in the game. They had much more firepower than you, but they used it stupidly. It had to be like that. You could only win against hundreds of alien ships if they had the same grasp of gunnery techniques as the common cucumber. This time, every gun had fired at exactly the same time. The captain's face appeared on the screen.
"I am sorry."
"What? What happened?"
"It will not happen again, I promise you."
"What happened?" There was silence. The captain appeared to be looking at something beyond the camera range.
"There was an unauthorized firing," she said. "Those responsible will be dealt with."
"I was going after that ship," said Johnny uncertainly.
"Yes. It is to be hoped that another time you can do so before one of my ships is destroyed."
"I'm sorry, I didn't want to fire. It's not easy shooting another ship."
"How strange that a human should say that. Clearly the space invaders shot themselves."
"What do you mean?"
"Were they doing you any harm?"
"Look, you've got the wrong idea," said Johnny. "We're not really like that."
"Excuse me. Things appear differently from where I sit."
It would have been better if she'd shouted, but she didn't. Johnny could have dealt with it if she'd been angry. Instead, she just sounded tired and sad. It was the same tone of voice in which she'd spoken about the space invaders' wreckage. But he found he was quite angry too. She couldn't be talking about him. He picked spiders out of the bath, even if they'd got soapy and didn't have much of a chance. Yet she'd looked at him as if he was Genghis the Hun or something, after blowing a ship into bits. "I didn't ask for this, you know. I was just playing a game. I've got problems of my own. I ought to be getting a good night's sleep. That's very important at my age. Why me?"
"Why not?"
"Well, I don't see why I should have to be told how nasty we are. You shoot at us as well."
"Self-defense."
"No. Often you shoot first."
"With humans, we have often found it essential to get our self-defense in as soon as possible."
"Well, I don't like it. Find someone else." He switched off the screen and turned his ship away from the fleet. He half expected the captain to send some fighters after him, but she did not. She didn't do anything. Soon the fleet was merely a large collection of yellow dots on the radar screen. Ha! Well, they could find their own way home. It wasn't as if they needed him anymore. The game was ruined. Who was going to spend hours looking at stars? They'd have to manage without him. Serve them right. He was doing things for them. And they were only newts. Occasionally a star went past. You didn't get stars going past in real space. But they had to put them in computer games so that people didn't think they'd got something like Wobbler's Journey to Alpha Centauri. Interesting point. Where was he going? The radar screen went bing. There were ships heading towards him. The dots were green. That meant friendly. But the missiles streaking ahead of them didn't look friendly at all. Hang on. Hang on. What colour was he on their radar? That was important. Friendly ships were green and enemy ships were yellow. He was a starship, a human starship. But on the other hand, he'd been on the same side as the Skreewee, so he might show up... He grabbed the microphone and got as far as, I... before the rest of the sentence was spread out, very thin, very small, against the stars. He woke up. It was 6:03 and 3 lines. His throat felt cold. He wondered why people made such a fuss about dreams. Dream boat, dream river, dream a little dream. But when you got right down to it, dreams were often horrible, and they felt real. Dreams always started out well, and then they went wrong, no matter what you did. You couldn't trust dreams. And he'd left the alarm set, even though this was Sunday, and there was nothing to do on a Sunday. No one else would be up for hours. It'd be a couple of hours even before Big Mac's brother delivered the paper, or at least delivered the wrong paper. And he was all stiff from sitting at the computer, which wasn't switched on. Maybe tonight he'd put some stuff on the floor to wake him up. He went back to bed and switched the blanket on. He stared at the ceiling for a while. There was still a model space shuttle up there, but one of the 2 bits of cotton had come away from the drawing pin, so it hung down in a permanent nosedive. There was something in the bed. He fumbled under the covers and pulled out his camera, which meant... Some more fumbling found a rectangle of shiny paper. He looked at it. Well, yes. Huh. What did he expect? He got up again and turned the computer on, then lay in bed so that he could watch the screen. Still more fake stars drifted past. Maybe other people were doing this too, all over the country, all over the world maybe. Maybe not every computer showed the same piece of game space, so that some people were closer to the fleet than others. Or maybe some people were just persistent like Wobbler and wouldn't be beaten. You saw people like that in J&J software sometimes. They'd have a go at whatever new game old Patel had put on the machine, get blown to bits or eaten or whatever, which was what happened to you on your first time, and then you couldn't get rid of them with a crowbar. You learned a bit more, and then you died. That's how games worked. People got worked up. They had to beat some game, in the same way that Wobbler would spend weeks trying to beat a program. Some people took it personally when they were blown to bits. So the ships he'd seen then were the ones who wouldn't give up. But the captain hadn't been at all grateful to him. It wasn't fair, making him feel like some kind of monster. As if he'd like shooting anyone in cold blood. They'd just totally destroyed another ship. Okay, it was attacking them after they had surrendered. But after all, it was only a game. Except, of course, it wasn't a game to the Skreewee. And they'd surrendered. That didn't make them his responsibility, did it? Not the whole time. It had been okay for a little while, but he was getting tired of it. He padded downstairs in the darkened house and pulled the encyclopedia off its shelf under the video. It had been bought last year from a man at the door who'd persuaded Johnny's father that it was a good encyclopedia because it had a lot of colour pictures in it. It did have a lot of colour pictures in it. You could grow up knowing what everything looked like, if you didn't mind not knowing much about what it was. After 10 minutes with the index, he got as far as prisoners of war, and eventually to the Geneva Convention. It wasn't something you could illustrate with big coloured pictures, so there wasn't much about it, but what there was, he read with interest. It was amazing. He'd always thought that prisoners were, well, prisoners. You hadn't actually killed them, so they ought to think themselves lucky. But it turned out that you had to give them the same food as your own soldiers, and look after them, and generally keep them safe. Even if they'd just bombed a whole city, you had to help them out of their crashed plane, give them medicine, and treat them properly. Johnny stared at the page. It was weird. The people who'd written the encyclopedia, it said inside the cover that they were the Universal Wonder Knowledge Data Printing Inc. of Power Cable, Nebraska, had shoved in all these pictures of parrots and stuff because they were the natural wonders of the world, when what was really strange was that human beings had come up with an idea like this. It was like finding a tiny bit of the Middle Ages in the middle of all the missiles and things. Johnny knew about the Middle Ages because of doing his essay on what it felt like to be a peasant in the Middle Ages. When a knight fell off his horse in battle, the other side weren't allowed to open him up with a can opener and torture him, but had to look after him, and send him back home after a while, although they were allowed to charge for the service. On the whole, the Scree-Wee were letting him off lightly. According to the Geneva Convention, he ought to be feeding all of them as well. He put the book back and turned the television on. That was odd. Someone was complaining that the enemy were putting prisoners of war in buildings that might be bombed, so that they could be bombed by their own side. That was a barbaric thing, said the man. Everyone else in the studio agreed. So did Johnny, in a way. But he wondered how he would explain something like this to the captain. Everything made sense a bit at a time. It was just when you tried to think of it all at once that it came out wrong. There was too much war on television now. He felt it was time to start showing something else. He went out into the kitchen and made himself some toast, and then tried to scrape the burnt bits off quietly so as not to wake people up. He took the toast and the encyclopedia upstairs and got back into bed. To pass the time, he read some more about Switzerland, which was where Geneva was. Every man in the country had to do army training and keep a gun at home, it said. But Switzerland never fought anyone. Perhaps that made sense somewhere. And what the country used to be known for was designing intricate and ingenious mechanical masterpieces that made a little wooden bird come out and go cuckoo. After a while, he dozed off and didn't dream at all. On the screen, the fake stars drifted by. After an hour or so, a yellow dot appeared in the very center. After another hour, it grew slightly bigger, enough to be seen as a cluster of smaller yellow dots. Then Johnny's mother, who had come to see where he was, tucked him up and switched it off. Chapter 5. If not you, who else? There was a constant smell of smoke and burnt plastic in the ship now, the captain noticed. The air conditioners couldn't get rid of it anymore. Some of the smoke and burnt plastic was the air conditioners. She could feel the eyes of her officers on her. She didn't know how many of them she could count on. She got the feeling that she wasn't very popular. She looked up into the eyes of the gunnery officer.
"You disobeyed my orders," she repeated.
The gunnery officer looked around the control room with an air of injured innocence.
"But we were being attacked," he said. "They fired the first shots." "I said that we would not fire,"
said the captain, trying to ignore the background murmur of agreement.
"I gave my word to the Chosen One. He was about to fire." "But he did not," said the gunnery officer. "He merely watched." "He was about to fire." "About is too late. The tanker Kriwia is destroyed, along with half our campaign provisions, I should add, Captain," said the gunnery officer. "Nevertheless, an order was directly disobeyed." "I cannot believe this. Why can't we fight?"
The captain pointed out of the window. The fleet was passing several more ships of the ancient space invader race.
"They fought," she said, "endlessly. And look at them now. And they were only the first. Remember what happened to the Vortiroids and the Megazoids and the Glaxoticon? Do you want to be like them?"
"Ha! They were primitive, very low resolution."
"But there were many of them, and they still died."
"If we are going to die, I for one would rather die fighting," said the gunnery officer.
This time the murmur was a lot louder.
"You would still be dead," said the captain.
She thought,
"There'll be a mutiny if I shoot him or imprison him. I can't fine him because none of us have been paid. I can't confine him to his quarters because..."
She hated to think this.
"We might need him at the end." "You are severely reprimanded," she said.
The gunnery officer smirked.
"It will go on your record,"
the captain added.
"Since we will not escape alive,"
the gunnery officer began.
"That is my responsibility,"
said the captain.
"You are dismissed."
The gunnery officer glared at her.
"When we get home."
"Oh,"
said the captain.
"Now you think we will get home."
By early evening, Johnny's temperature was 102, and he was suffering from what his mother called Sunday night flu. He was lying in the lovely warm glow that comes from knowing that whatever happens, there'll be no school tomorrow. The backs of his eyeballs felt itchy, the insides of his elbows felt hot. It was what came of spending all his time in front of a computer, he'd been told, instead of in the healthy, fresh air. He couldn't quite see this, even in his itchy eyeball state. Surely the fresh air would have been worse. But in his experience, being ill always came of whatever you'd been doing. Parents would probably manage to say it came of taking vitamins and wrapping up nice and warm. He'd probably get an appointment down at the health centre next Friday, since they always liked you to be good and ill by the time you came, so that the doctors could be sure of what you'd got. He could hear the TV downstairs. He spent 20 minutes wondering whether to get out of bed to switch on his old one, but when he moved, there were purple blurs in front of his eyes and a going hum in his ears. He must have managed it, though, because next time he looked, it was on, and the colours were much better than usual. There were the newscasters, the black one and the one who looked like his glasses fitted under his skin instead of over the top, and there was the studio, just like normal. Except that it had the words "Scree-wee-war" in the corner, where there were usually words like budget shock or Euro summit. He couldn't hear what people were saying, but the screen switched to a map of space. It was black. That was the point of space. It was just infinity, huge and black, with one dot in it that was everything else. There was one stubby red arrow in the middle of the blackness. Several dozen blue ones were heading towards it from the edge of the map. In one corner of the map was a photo of a man talking into a phone. Hang on, thought Johnny. I'm almost certain there wasn't a BBC reporter with the Scree-wees. They'd have said. Probably there isn't even a CNN one. He still wasn't getting any sound, but he didn't really need any. It was obvious that humans were closing in on the fleet. The scene changed. Now it showed a tent somewhere, and there was the huge man standing in front of another copy of the map. This time the sound came up. He was saying, "That Johnny, he's no fighter. He's no politician. He goes home when the going gets tough. He runs out on his obligations. But apart from that, hey, he's a real nice kid."
"That's not true,"
Johnny shouted.
"It isn't,"
said a voice behind him. He didn't look around immediately. By the sound of it, the voice had come from his chair. And that was much more impossible than the Scree-wee being on television. No one could sit in that chair. It was full of old T-shirts and books and supper plates and junk. There was a deep sock layer and possibly the lost strawberry yogurt. No one could sit down there without special equipment. The captain was, though. She seemed quite at home. He'd only ever seen her face on the screen. Now he could see that she was about 2 meters long, but quite thin. More like a fat snake with legs than an alligator or a newt. She had 2 thick, heavy pairs about halfway down and 2 pairs of thinner ones at the top on a set of very complicated shoulders. Most of her was covered in a brown overall. The bits that stuck out, her head, all 8 hands or feet, and most of her tail, were a yellow bronze and covered in very small scales. "If you parked out in the road, Mrs. Cannock opposite would be really mad," Johnny heard himself say. "She goes on about my dad leaving his car parked out in the road, and it's not even 1,000 meters long. So this is a hallucination, isn't it?"
"Of course it is," said the captain. "I'm not sure that real space and game space are connected, except in your head."
"I saw this film once where spaceships could go anywhere in the universe through wormholes in space," said Johnny.
"That means I've got a wormhole in my head?"
The captain shrugged, which was a very interesting sight in a being with 4 arms.
"Watch this," she said. "This is very impressive. I expect this will be shown a lot."
She pointed at the screen. It showed stars and a dot in the distance. It got bigger very quickly.
"I think I know that," said Johnny. "It's one of your ships, the sort you get on Level 7, isn't it?" "The type, I think, will not matter for long,"
said the captain quietly. The ship was heading away from the camera. Its rocket exhausts got larger and larger. The camera seemed to be mounted on a...
"Missile?"
said Johnny weakly. The screen went blank. Johnny thought of the dead space invader armada, turning over and over in the frosty emptiness between the game stars.
I don't want to know about it, said Johnny. I don't want you to tell me how many Scree-wee there were on board. I don't want you to tell me what hap-
No, said the captain. I expect you don't.
It's not my fault. I can't help what people are like.
Of course not.
The captain had a nasty way of talking in a reasonable voice.
We are under attack, she said. Humans are attacking us, even though we have surrendered.
Yes, but you only surrendered to me, said Johnny. It's just me. It's not like surrendering to a government or something. I'm not important.
On the contrary, said the Scree-wee. You're the savior of civilization. You're all that stands between your world and certain oblivion. You are the last hope.
But that's not real. That's just what it says at the start of the game.
And you did not believe it?
Look, it always says something like that.
Only you can save mankind,
said the captain.
Yes, but it's not really true.
If not you, then who else?
Look, said Johnny, I have saved mankind. In the game, anyway. There aren't any Scree-wee attacking anymore. People have to play it for hours to find any.
The captain smiled. The shrug had been impressive, but the captain's mouth was half a meter long.
You humans are strange,
she said.
You are warlike, but you make rules. Rules of war.
I think we don't always obey all those rules, said Johnny.
Another forearm shrug.
Does that matter? Even to have made such rules? You think all of life is a game?
The captain pulled a small piece of silvery paper out of a pocket of her overall.
Your attackers have left us too short of food. So, by your rules, she said, I must ask for the following. 15 tons of pressed wheat extractions treated with sucrose. 10,000 liters of cold bovine lactation. 25 tons of the baked wheat extraction containing grilled bovine flesh and trace ingredients, along with chopped and fried tubers and fried and corn extract-coated rings of vegetables of the allium family. 1 ton of crushed mustard seeds mixed with water and permitted additives. 3 tons of exploded corn kernels coated with lactic derivation. 10,000 liters of coloured water containing sucrose and trace elements. 15 tons of prepared and fermented wheat extract in vegetable juice. 1,000 tons of soured lactic acid flavoured with fruit extract. Daily. Thank you.
What?
The food of your fighting men, explained the captain.
Doesn't sound like food.
You are right, said the captain. It is disgustingly lacking in fresh vegetables and dangerously high in carbohydrates and saturated fats. However, it appears that this is what you eat.
Me? I don't even know what that stuff is. What are pressed wheat extractions treated with sucrose?
It said snappy flakes on the packet, said the captain.
Soured lactic acid?
You had a banana yogurt.
Johnny's lips moved as he tried to work this out. The grilled bovine flesh and all that stuff.
A hamburger and fries with fried onion rings.
Johnny tried to sit up. Are you saying that I've got to go down to the shops and get takeaway jumbo burgers for an entire alien space fleet?
Not exactly.
I should think not.
My chief engineer wants a bucket of chicken lumps.
What does Scree-wee usually eat?
Normally, we eat a kind of water weed. It contains a perfect balance of vitamins, minerals, and trace elements to ensure a healthy growth of scale and crest.
Then why?
But, as you would put it, it tastes like poo.
Oh.
The captain stood up. It was a beautiful movement. The Scree-wee body had no angles in it, apart from the elbows and knees. She seemed to be able to bend wherever she wanted.
And now I must return, she said. I hope your attack of minor germs will shortly be over. I could only wish that my attack of human beings was as easily cured.
Why aren't you fighting back? Said Johnny. I know you can.
No, you are wrong. We have surrendered. Yes, but we will not fire on human ships. Sooner or later, it has to stop. We will run instead. Someone gave us safe conduct.
The worst bit was that she didn't raise her voice or accuse him of anything. She just made statements. Big, horrible statements. All right, said Johnny in a dull voice. But I know it's not real. I've got the flu. You get mild hallucinations when you get the flu. Everyone knows that. I remember I was ill once and all the floppy bunnies on the wallpaper started dancing about. This is like that. You can't really know about this stuff. You're just in my head.
What difference does that make?
Said the captain. She stepped out through the wall and then poked her head back into the room.
Remember, she said, only you can save mankind.
And I said I already...
Scree-wee is only the human name for us, said the captain. Have you ever wondered what the Scree-wee word for Scree-wee is?
He must have slept, but he didn't dream. He woke up in the middle of the afternoon. A huge ball of incandescent nuclear fire, heated to millions of degrees, was shining brightly in the sky. The house was empty. His mother had left him a breakfast tray, which was to say that she'd put together a new Snappy Flakes packet, a spoon, a bowl, and a note saying, milk in fridge. She'd also put her office phone number on the bottom of the note. He knew what it was anyway, but sometimes she used the phone number like other people would use an elastoplast. He opened the packet and fished around inside. The alien was in a hygienic little paper bag. It was yellow, and in fact did look a bit like the captain, if you almost shut your eyes. He wandered aimlessly through the rooms. There was never anything any good on television in the middle of the day. It was all women talking to one another on sofas. He sneaked a look out into the road, just in case there were half-mile-long rocket exhaust burns. And then he went back upstairs and sat and stared at the silent computer. Okay. So, you switch on. And there's the game. Somehow it felt worse thinking about playing it by just sitting in front of it now. On the other hand, it was daytime, so most people would be at school, or at least keeping a low profile somewhere. Johnny wasn't quite certain about game time and real time, but maybe the attacks stopped when people had to go to school. But no, there were probably people playing it in America or Australia or somewhere. Besides, when you died in your sleep, you woke up. So what happens now if you die while you're awake? But the Scree-wee were getting slaughtered out there. Or in there. Or in here. The captain was stupid not to fire back. His hand switched on the computer without his mind really being aware of it. The game logo appeared. The music started up. The same old message scrolled up the screen. He knew it by heart. Savior of civilization. Certain oblivion. Only you can save mankind. If not you, who else? He blinked. The message had scrolled off the top of the screen. He couldn't have imagined that extra line, could he? And then the same old stars. He didn't touch the keyboard or the joystick. He wasn't certain what direction he should be going in. On the whole, straight on seemed best. For hours. He glanced at the clock. It was just gone 4 o'clock. People would be home from school now. They'd be watching Cobbers and She'll Be Apples and Mooney Ponds. Big Mac would be watching with his mouth open at his brother's. Wobbler would be watching while trying to rob some other poor computer games writer of his just rewards. Yolus probably wouldn't be paying much attention, exactly. It'd just be on while he did his homework. Yolus always did his homework when he got home from school, and didn't pay attention to anything else until it had been finished to his satisfaction. But everyone watched Cobbers. Except Johnny, today. He felt vaguely proud of that. The television was off. He had other things to do. Somewhere in the last 10 minutes, he'd made a decision. He wasn't sure exactly what it was, but he'd made it, so he had to see it through, whatever it was. He went to the bathroom and had a go with the thermometer. It was an electronic one that his mother had bought from a catalogue, and it also told the time. Everything in the catalogue had a digital clock built in. Even the golf umbrella that doubled as a handy picnic table. Even the thing for getting fluff out of socks. Away with not being able to know what the time is all the time blues, said Johnny vaguely, and stuck the thermometer in his mouth for the required 20 seconds. His temperature was 16.04 degrees. No wonder he felt cold. He went back to bed with the thermometer still in his mouth and looked at the screen again. Still just stars. The rest of them would probably be down at the Mall now, unless Yolus was trying for an A-plus with his homework. Hanging out, waiting for another day to end. He squinted at the thermometer. It read 16.07 degrees. Still nothing but stars on the screen. Chapter 6 Chicken Lumps in Space. He woke up. The familiar smell of the starship tickled his nose. He cast his eyes over the control panel. He was getting a bit more familiar with it now. Right, so he was back in real life again. When he got back to... He'd have to have a word with the medics about this odd recurring dream that he was a boy in. No, he thought. I'm me. Not a pilot in a computer game. If I start thinking like that, then I'll really die. Got to take charge. Then he noticed the other ships on the screen. He was still a long way from the fleet, of course, but there were three other ships spread out neatly behind him, in convoy. They were bigger and fatter than his, and insofar as it was possible to do this in space, they seemed to wallow rather than fly. He hit the communications button. A plump face appeared on the screen. Wobbler? Johnny? What are you doing in my head? The on-screen Wobbler looked around. Well, according to this little panel riveted on the control thingy, I'm flying a Class 3 light tanker. Wow! Is it normally like this inside your head? I'm not sure, said Johnny. By the main communication screen was another switch saying Conference Facility. He had a feeling he knew what it did. Sure enough, when he pressed it, Wobbler's face drifted to the top left-hand corner of the screen. Yolus's face appeared in the opposite corner, with Johnny's own head above it. The other corner stayed blank. Johnny tapped a button. Big Mac? He said. Yolus? Big Mac's face appeared in the blank. He appeared to be wiping his mouth. Checking the cargo, said Johnny sarcastically. It's full of hamburgers, said Big Mac, in a voice like a good monk who's just arrived in heaven and found that all the sins of the flesh are allowed. Boxes and boxes of hamburgers! I mean millions! With fries! And one bucket of chicken lumps, it says here. It says on this clipboard, said Yolus, that I'm flying a lot of prepared corn and wheat products. Shall I go and see what they are? Okay, said Johnny. Then that means you're driving the milk tanker, Wobbler. Oh, yes, that's right. Big Mac gets burgers, Wobbler gets boring milk, moaned Wobbler. Yolus's face reappeared. Back there it's breakfast cereals mainly, he said, in giant, jumbo, mega-civilization-sized boxes. Then Big Mac had better bring his ship between you and Wobbler, said Johnny briskly. We can't risk a collision. Snap, crackle, fa-ba-ba-ba-boom, said Big Mac. Will we remember this when we wake up, said Wobbler. How can we, said Yolus. We're not dreaming. Okay, okay. So will we remember this... When he wakes up? I don't know. I think we're only here as projections from his own subconscious mind, said Yolus. He's just dreaming us. You mean we're not real? Said Big Mac. I'm not sure if I'm real, said Johnny. It feels real, said Wobbler. Smells real, too. Tastes real, said Big Mac. Looks real, said Yolus. But he's only imagining we're here. It's not really us. Just the us that's inside his head. Don't ask me, thought Johnny. You were always best at this stuff. And I've just worked out, right, said Yolus, that if we send in the box tops from every single packet back there, we can get 6,000 sets of saucepans, okay? And 20,000 books of football stickers, and 57,000 chances to win a stylish 5-door Ford Sierra. The four ships lumbered on towards the distant fleet. Johnny's starship could easily outdistance the tankers, so he flew in wide circles around them, watching the radar screen. There was an occasional zip and sizzle from Wobbler's tanker. He was trying to take its computer apart, just in case there were any design innovations Johnny might remember when he woke up. Ships appeared on the screen. There was the big dot of the fleet, and around the edges of the screen, the green dots of the game players. A thought occurred to him.
Yolas?
Yeah?
Have those things got any guns on?
What do they look like?
There's probably a red button on the joystick.
Not got one on mine.
What about you, Wobbler? Big Mac?
Nope. Which one's the joystick? Said Big Mac.
It's the thing you're steering with.
Yeah, wipe the mustard off and have a look, said Yolas. Nothing on it, said Big Mac.
Unarmed, thought Johnny, and slow. One hit with a missile, and Wobbler is sitting inside the biggest cheese in the universe. What happens to people in my dream? Why does it always go wrong?
I'll just go on ahead, he said,
and pressed the fast button. There were three players attacking the Screewee fleet. It soon became two. Johnny had one in his sights all the way in, curving away through the smoke ring of the explosion and heading for the next attacker so fast that he was only just behind his own missile. It was going after the captain's ship, and the player wasn't paying attention to his radar. Another explosion, already behind Johnny as he looked for the third player. Johnny realized he wasn't thinking about it. His eyes and hands were doing all the work. He was just watching from inside. The third player had spotted the tankers. It saw him, turned, and actually managed to get some shots away. Oh no, Johnny's mind whirred like a machine judging speed and distance. He felt the ship buck under him, but he held it steady until the crosshairs merged. Then he pressed his thumb down until a beeping sound told him he hadn't got anything more to fire. After a while, the red mist cleared. He found thoughts slinking back into his mind again. They moved slowly, uncertain of where they were, like people drifting back into a bombed city, picking through rubble, trying to find the old, familiar shapes. There was a metallic taste in his mouth. His elbow ached. He must have banged it on something during the turn. He thought, no wonder we make rules. The captain thinks it's strange, but we don't. We know what we'd be like if we didn't have rules. A light flashed by the communication screen. Someone wanted to talk to him. He flicked a switch. The face of the captain appeared.
Ah, Johnny, what an efficient technique.
Yes, but I had to...
Of course, and I see you have brought some friends.
You said you needed food.
Even more so now. That last attack was severe.
Aren't you firing at all?
No, we have surrendered, I remind you. Besides, we must not stop. Some of us, at least, will reach the border.
Border? Said Johnny. I thought you were going to a planet.
We must cross the border first. Beyond the border, we are safe. Even you cannot follow us. If we fight, all of us die. If we run, some of us live.
I don't think humans can think like that, said Johnny. He glanced out of the cockpit. The tankers were getting nearer.
You are mammals, fast, hot-blooded. We are amphibians, cold-blooded, slow, logical. Some of us will get across. We breed fast. To us it makes sense. To me it makes sense.
The captain's image moved to a corner of the screen. Wobbler, Big Mac and Yolas appeared in the other three quarters.
That was brilliant shooting, said Big Mac. When I'm in the army...
There's a frog on my screen, said Wobbler.
It's Cheese the Captain, said Johnny.
A woman in charge, said Yolas.
No wonder the aliens always lose, said Wobbler. You should see the side of my mum's car.
She can hear you, I think. Don't use sexist language, said Johnny. The captain smiled.
I invite your comrades to unload their welcome cargoes, she said.
They found out how to do it eventually. The whole of the middle of the tankers came away as one unit. Small Screewee ships, not much more than a seat and a pilot's bubble and a motor, nudged them into the holds of the biggest ships. Without them, the tankers were just a cockpit and engine and a big empty network of girders. Johnny watched the tank from Yolas's ship drift gently through the hatch of the captain's ship.
If when you're pouring them out of the packet, he said,
and you sort of find something plastic falls into your bowl. Well, it's just a joke. It's not on purpose.
Thank you.
If you save all the box tops, you could probably win a Ford Sierra, said Iolaus.
There was a slight tremble in his voice as he tried to sound like someone who talked to aliens every day.
You could get your photo in competitors' journal, he added.
That would be very useful. Some of the corridors in this ship are very long.
Don't be daft, said Big Mac. She'd never get the spares.
Really? In that case, we shall have to go for the 6,000 sets of saucepans, said the captain.
How do we get back? Said Wobbler.
How did you get here?
Wobbler frowned.
How did we get here? He said. One minute I was... And then here I was. Here we were.
Come to that, where did all the milk and burgers come from? Said Big Mac.
It's all right, said Iolaus. I told you. We're not really here anyway. We're just anxiety projections. I read about it in a book.
That's a relief, then, said Wobbler. That's worth knowing when you're a billion miles out in space. Anyway, so how do we get back?
I don't know, said Johnny. I generally do it by dying.
Is there some other way? Said Iolaus, after a long, thoughtful pause.
I don't think there is for me. This is game space. You have to die to get out, said Johnny. I think you can probably just fly back. I'm not definitely sure any harm can come to you. You're not playing. In your heads, I mean.
Well, Wobbler began.
But I should go soon if I was you, said Johnny, before some more players arrive.
We'd stay and help, said Wobbler. But there's no guns on these things, you see.
He sounded worried.
Yeah, silly of me not to have dreamed of any, said Johnny kindly.
Iolaus might be right, and we're just stuff in your head, said Wobbler. But even people in dreams don't want to die, I expect.
Right.
You going to be at school tomorrow?
Might be.
Right. Well then, ciao. See you.
You hang in there, right, Johnny? Said Iolaus anxiously.
I'll try to.
Yeah, give them aliens hell, my man,
said Big Mac, as the tankers turned. Johnny could hear them still talking as the three ships accelerated away.
That was a faux pas, Big Mac. Johnny's on the alien side.
What? You mean they're on our side?
No, they're on their side, and so is he.
Whose side are we on, then?
We're on his side.
Oh, right. Iolaus.
What?
So, who's on our side?
Eh? Well, he is, I suppose.
So, is there anyone on the other side?
The ships became dots on the radar and then vanished off the edge of the screen. Where to, Johnny had no idea. I may have wished them here, or dreamed them or something, but I mustn't do it again. Maybe they're not really here, but I don't want to see my friends die. I don't want to see anybody die. At least I'm on my side. He scanned the sky. After a while, the captain said,
You are not leaving?
Not yet.
Until you die, you mean?
Johnny shrugged. It's the only way out, he said. Fight until you die. That's how all games go. You just hope you can get a bit further each time. There were still no more attackers on the screen. The fleet looked as if it wasn't moving, but it had built up quite a speed. Every second was taking it further from game space. Every second meant that fewer and fewer players would have the patience or determination to go on looking for it. He helped himself to some of the horrible nourishing soup from its spigot.
Johnny?
Yes?
I believe I upset you some time ago by suggesting that humans are bloodthirsty and dangerous.
Well, yes, a bit.
In that case, I would like to say I am grateful.
I don't understand.
That you are on our side.
Yes, but I'm not bloodthirsty.
Then I think perhaps a little while ago someone else must have been flying your ship.
No, It's hard to explain it to you, said Johnny. First of all, he'd have to be able to explain it to himself.
Shall I embark upon a less troubling topic of conversation?
You don't have to, said Johnny. I mean, you're in charge. You must have things to do.
Oh, spaceships fly themselves, said the captain. They keep going until they hit things. There is little to do. Tend the wounded and so on. I seldom have a chance to talk to humans. So, what is sexist?
What?
It was a word you used.
Oh, that! It just means you should treat people as people, and, you know, not just assume girls can't do stuff. We've got to talk about it at school. There's lots of stuff most girls can't do, but you've got to pretend they can, so that more of them will. That's all of it, really.
Presumably there's, stuff boys can't do?
Oh, yeah, but that's just girls' stuff, said Johnny. Anyway, some girls go and become engineers and things, so they can do proper stuff if they want.
Transcend the limitations of their sex. Outdo the other sex, even. Yes, it is much the same with us. Some individuals show an awe-inspiring desire to succeed, to make a career in a field not traditionally considered to be appropriate to their gender.
You mean, said Johnny.
I was referring to the gunnery officer.
But he's a man. I mean, a male.
Yes. Traditionally, scree-wee warriors are female. They are more inclined to fight. Our ancestors used to have to fight to protect their breeding pond. The males do not do battle. But in his case...
A speck appeared on the radar. Johnny put down his cup and watched it carefully. Normally, players headed straight for the fleet. This one didn't. It hovered right on the edge of the screen and stayed there, keeping pace with the scree-wee ships. After a while, another dot appeared from the same direction and kept on coming. This one, at least, looked like just another player. There was a nasty equation at the back of Johnny's mind. It concerned missiles. There were 6 missiles per level in Only You Can Save Mankind. Once you'd fired them, that was it. So the longer he stayed alive, the less he had to fight with. But all the attacking players would have 6 missiles each. He'd only got 4 now. When they were gone, it'd be just guns. One missile in the right place would blow him up. Losing was kind of built in the circumstances. The attacker came on. But Johnny kept finding his gaze creeping to the dot at the edge of the screen. Somehow, it had a watchful look, like a shark trailing a leaky airbed. He switched on the communicator. Attacking ship! Attacking ship! Stop now! They can't speak, Johnny thought. They're only a player. They're not in the game. They can't speak and they can't listen. He found he'd automatically targeted a missile on the approaching dot. But that couldn't be the only way. Sooner or later you had to talk, even if it was only because you'd run out of things to throw. The attacker fired a missile. It streaked past Johnny and away, heading on into empty space. Not real, Johnny thought. You have to think they're not real. Otherwise you can't do it. Attacking ship! This is your last chance! Look, I mean it! He pressed the button. The ship juddered slightly as a missile took off. The attacker was moving fast. So was the missile. They met and became an expanding red cloud. It drifted around Johnny's ship like a smoke ring. Someone somewhere was blinking at their screen and probably swearing, he hoped. The dot was still on the edge of the screen. It was irritating him, like an itch in a place he couldn't scratch. Because that wasn't how you were supposed to play. You spotted some aliens and you shot at them. That was what the game was supposed to be about. Lurking in the distance and just watching made him uneasy. It looked like the kind of thing people would do if they were, well, taking it seriously. The captain sat in front of her desk watching the big screen. She was chewing. Anything was better than waterweed. Even, she looked at the packet, even sugar-frosted corn crackles in cold bovine lactation. Sweet and crunchy, but with odd hard bits in. She inserted a claw into her mouth and poked around among her teeth until she found the offending object. She pulled it out and looked at it. It was green and had four arms. Most of them were holding some sort of weapon. She wondered again what these things were. The chief medical officer had suggested that they were